The following talk was given at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on October 14, 2018. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Well, I think most everyone here knows who I am to some degree or another. I'll just tell you that my name is Dokai Georgeson, and I reside at Hokyoji Zen Practice Community. It's in the very, very southeastern tip of Minnesota. That means if you had a big map and you had a mechanical pencil and you wanted to try to draw a little dot in the corner, that's where I spend quite a bit of time. That means it's 500 feet from Iowa and also about 2 miles from Wisconsin. So it's a very beautiful area. It's called the Driftless Zone, and many, many hills and valleys and topography that's very interesting. Hokyoji is a place where Steve and Norm and several of you in this congregation are very familiar with, helping it grow from 40 years ago. It was purchased by MZMC Zen Center 40 years ago. So, first, thank you for the invitation to come and speak. It's always nice to see my elder Dharma brothers, Norm and Steve. When thinking about that, when I was younger, they seemed like really old. You know? They're only like 5 and 7 years older than me, but they seemed like they were really old and big guys. But now, there's this thing in mathematics called convergence. And it's like as you keep going further and further and further, the numbers start to converge. So I'm imagining if Steve, Norm, and I live another 100 years, and there's like 5 or 6 or 10 years difference between us, we'll all seem like it's all converged. So it feels like that's really converging to me. But again, it's very nice to be here again. I also want to tell you, express gratitude that this Zen Center gave a generous gift to Hokyoji for its to construct some new buildings there. The design and financing was settled by our board of directors a few weeks ago, and construction began about 3 weeks ago. It's a $697,000 project. So thank you all for not only your Zen Center, but a number of individuals contributed to that project as well. It took 4 years to get it off the ground. And like I said, it just began a few weeks ago. And a lot of big equipment there, so it's very interesting to watch. So first I'd like to tell you probably what seems to me, although I can't be sure yet, about some kind of life-transforming event, or let's say practice-transforming event that occurred in my life a few weeks ago. Well, one is getting this Hokyoji thing off the ground. I mean, that was like 4 years of really intense hard work for me and others, and then just to see it manifest, it's like, well, this kind of is something just lifted in terms of feeling not burdened by something. So that was an opening in a certain way. But another one is I went to a conference just a few weeks ago. In fact, well, it wasn't even that. Maybe it ended, Can't quite remember. I'm losing track of time. But anyway, it wasn't long ago. And it's called the Soto Zen Buddhist Association. And it has about 300 members. They're all ordained people in the Soto Zen tradition across the USA. And they have a conference every 2 years, and this was the fifth conference I went to. Most of the time, the conferences were interesting, but just a little dry, if you can imagine. You've ever been to conferences. And I would go, and I felt, well, I did my job, my duty. And then I would ask myself, I wonder if I should go to the next one next year, or next 2 years. So anyway, just a few days after the Hokyoji Board of Directors coalesced around the exact design and the amount of financing we would seek to do this project, I got a call from the president of this organization. And essentially, she asked me to be on the board of directors. And this was just 3 days after this thing lifted from Hokyoji, so I felt some like open space in my life. And so I said, okay, yes, I'll do that. And so going to the conference was a little different this time because, well, now I'm on the board, so let's try to really engage and be open to things as much as possible. But before I tell you what we talked about, I just want to give you a prelude that I really got rattled by this conference. Now, I know rattling sometimes means like a bad thing, like we don't want to get rattled. But I was thinking, well, why did I choose that word, rattled, as I'm thinking about how I want to describe it? And I would think about a physical rattle that a little kid has in their hands and they like to rattle it. And I don't know why they would like to do that, but let's just imagine. It's got a kind of a shell and then there's something inside, I don't know what, but they're all bouncing around and moving. And there's something attractive to a kid about doing that. So anyway, that's what it feels like to me, like my outside is basically intact, although it's losing in its intactness quite rapidly these days due to a number of things I won't go into right now. But anyway, the insides feel like they just got all rattled around, especially in terms of this practice that we do. So the overall theme was called interconnecting and kind of one Zen, many different expressions. And another kind of major sub-theme was diversity, equality, and inclusion. How do we practice with those things? And it might be particularly challenging for us to do that when some of us learned from a tradition that was very hierarchical and patriarchal coming down. So how do we actually move it into our culture in a way that's real and sustainable? So whatever we're doing, and I have this, you know, nagging concern in the back of my brain, especially now that I'm 67, and kind of like, well, how are things going to continue at this place where I've been for 15 years? Because I'm not going to be around there, you know, for So how is it going to actually have vitality and live, grow, prosper? And so I'm not sure of the answer, but I do think it has to do with these issues of diversity in terms of attracting younger people, people of color, lots of things like that. We also talked about issues, power issues that most of us aren't aware of. And the information I'm still trying to process, so I can't really give you the information right now. Things like white privilege and white fragility in terms of racism. And then we did a particularly moving segment related to the Me Too movement, where the men got into one group and the women into another. And we shared things that primarily were sexual, with our own gender, about our challenges and history and things. And this was a particularly moving event. Of course, I have no idea what the women talked about, except I've heard inferentially that it was quite moving and deep for them. And it was for the men, just for 35 ordained men to sit around and talk about sex together. So for me, it was quite the whole thing, just it was moving and kind of disturbing, and just kind of, like I said, unraveled some things that were deep inside of me that I basically don't know that I was conscious of. When I was out in your little entryway for a few moments, and I saw you have these three circles. One's called, I'm not exactly, if I remember, one's called like Zen practice, and I think you mean by that like traditional Zen practice ones. One's Western culture, and the other one is Dharma field practice. And then in the middle, kind of joining together, like, what's the practice we do here? This is what my interpretation of that symbol was. So you're looking at the whole picture and trying to create a practice that's vital and alive, that blends, respects the culture we're in. So at the end of the conference, now I'm on the board of director, there was another day of meetings with just the board. And so, of course, we reviewed the conference and things like that. But then we came down to, and incidentally, I have the position of treasurer, and that was kind of a little bit of a manipulation on my part, in that when I said I'd be available to the board, I always kind of qualified it with, I actually don't have a lot of trouble with numbers, at least relative to most Zen students. You know, so I said, if you really wanted someone to like be a treasurer, I could probably fill in for you. That was actually an act to avoid other kinds of positions. So that being established, I am now the treasurer. However, then there was, as we went around the room, there's only six of us presently. Also, a board member takes responsibility for being a liaison to, say, a committee that's trying to move these initiatives forward, or initiatives set by the board. What do we want to do? And so one initiative is like membership. And I go, oh, no. You know, I'm not saying that verbally, just because it's inside. And then we go through a nominating committee. And I thought, oh, God, no, please, please, not me. And then we go through a lay teachers, a priest teachers, how they interrelate with each other. And I think, no, no, no. And what else? Oh, yeah, then the next conference, you know, a committee setting up the next conference. And I say, no, 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 please not. And then we get down to the, now we're down to the last one. They say, what about this diversity, equality, and inclusion initiative? And the president looks at me and says, okay, why don't you take that one on? And I thought, oh boy. I thought, you know, I told you I just live 500 feet from Iowa, and this place where I live is very, very rural, so it's like probably one of the most conservative areas in the United States. And I thought, how in the world, how is this coming to me, you know, this responsibility to... In any event, I accept it. So that's just a prelude for what I want to talk about now, because I'm in a different place. And this is the first public talk I've given since that conference. So I was just looking back over the things, you know, that I've studied and learned over the years, and I said, what makes sense to talk about now? And so this is what I came up with. In the first sermon that the Buddha gave to his five monks who had been with him but left him for a while, and he came back after he had gotten some nourishment because he had been practicing asceticism, and he thought, this isn't the way to do it. So he came back and he gave a sermon, and I'm not going to go through the whole sermon. I'm only going to say two lines of it. And he basically said, there is this truth of suffering in the human world. There is this truth. And then a second line after that, he says, this suffering or this pain must be comprehended. So for me, that means both internally and externally, we need to really comprehend the suffering and the pain that's in ourselves and the world, if we're really going to make this practice alive and relevant. The Buddha also talked about seven factors of awakening. The order I have is first is mindfulness, that we become mindful. Our circumstances, our world, ourselves, internally, externally, what we're doing, paying attention. And the second one, and this is the one that's coming out most prevalently in my mind at present, is investigation. We need to thoroughly investigate the circumstances that we're living in, not turning away from something. The others, incidentally, are called energy, joy, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. When I first was studying these, I was... Sometimes when you become a Zen teacher, I've noticed this as a pattern. Sometimes you get, let me use the word, tired. You know, it's like there's so much, you know, we're not like, we're mostly, even though some have like more money than others, we're not like affluent. You know, it's like It's like we have to do a lot of work at Hokyoji. I have to mow the lawn. I have to take out, you know, I have to do all this stuff, even though I'm the guiding teacher. And just lots and lots of work. And so we kind of get overextended. And I've noticed that many times looking around at some of my peers. They say, I just can't do anymore. You know, you can't do anymore. That kind of a thing. So when I look at these factors of enlightenment called energy, joy, tranquility, and I think, well, maybe something's not right if these things aren't growing and being cultivated and more evident in our life. So that's what I'll say from the Buddha. Another thing I'd like to talk about is just another sutra written by his Japanese name is Sekito Kisen, lived from 700 to 790. He wrote a few different things, but attributed to him, but one's called The Harmony of Difference and Equality. And I didn't ask, but is that something you chant here? Mm-hmm. Okay. Sorry? Oh, okay. The sameness? Merging of difference and unity. Yeah, they have different, you know, some is merging, some is harmony and whatever. And then, so anyway, but this passage came to me in light of these recent experiences, is the harmony or merging of what's different and what's the same. And he basically, this author, goes through and looks those some things in it's a poem. And just one line I thought I would mention. And he says, grasping at things is surely delusion. According with sameness is still not realization. So there's the grasping at things is surely delusions. That's all the individual things that are existing in this world. And if we, and which are limitless. I mean, I could use the word billions, but that doesn't even approach it. Billions, all the individual things. And if we're grasping to get something, And the most recently, the thing that I might start to think about grasping is, let's just say, I really want to have people of color practicing at Hokyoji. But already that's like grasping, I'm trying to get something. And I don't think that works. But the other side of that is, according with sameness is still not realization. Which means, well, we're all the same. We're all the same. This is some kind of thing that comes up quite a bit in Buddhism and maybe even more with Zen. Is we emphasize the whole universal or absolute aspect of everything. But I think there's something that we misunderstand about that. Or we can't emphasize that more than how we're all different at the same time. So these two things are arising at the same time. Our differences and our sameness. So it's how do we pay attention and work and live and practice right in that moment where all these things are arising at the same time. So I'm moving on to Dogen now, another considered basically the founder of this particular school of Zen Buddhism that we practice. He says, as all things are Buddha Dharma, there is delusion and realization, practice and birth and death, and there are Buddhas and sentient beings. As the myriad things are with and out an abiding self, there is no delusion, no realization, no Buddha, no sentient beings, no birth and death. The Buddha way is basically leaping clear of the many and the one. Thus there are birth and death, delusion and realization, sentient beings and Buddhas. Yet, in attachment, blossoms fall, and in aversion, weeds spread. So this is, I believe, it's a further explanation of this same thing. In other words, as everything is the Buddha Dhamma, there is just this thing, that thing, everything. There are you and me, men and women, people of color, people who are white. All the differences that there are in the world are, that's here. And that's, he says, this is where we need to start our investigation, looking at all this, these things. However, he also says, in Buddhism we talk about there's no abiding self. In other words, there's no self here that's going to last forever. There's no self, no permanent abiding self in anything. Not even in a rock or a diamond, really. Whether it be living or not living. Even at some time or another, a diamond is going to disintegrate. It'll be around a lot longer than any of us, but still, it's subject to changing. So there's nothing, even though we look at the world and see all these differences in everything, still, there's nothing there that has an abiding self, an abiding nature that's not subject to just change and impermanence. Everything is like that. So based on that, there's also another way in which, well, there isn't anything called you or me, really, at the bottom of it. And the final statement then is where we want to try to really practice is that this practice we do, the Buddhist way, is basically leaping clear of that many, that thing that we call many, and the thing that we call oneness. It's leaping clear of that. So that being so, still we live in a world where there is birth and death and all the myriad things that there are. We live here, and this is where we have to practice. And then he concludes with saying, yet in attachment blossoms fall, and in aversion weeds spread. So that just means, well, there's still no place to actually reside, you know. We have to constantly just pay attention to what is it that we're trying to get and attach to, and what is it we're avoiding. Because if we're avoiding something, weeds are going to spread. That just means weeds aren't bad things. They're just things that work against our garden or something. And then an attachment just means whatever we're attached to and want and desire just means it's going to fall. We're going to fall. A blossom, those blossoms, this beautiful thing that I want, whatever I attach to, it's basically just going to fall away. It's not going to manifest the way I want if we're really attached to something. Well, I'll just jump ahead to another passage. That Dolgen writes about, and I was just this has been from a passage that I studied quite a bit, but I'm not going to read the whole thing, just one line, because I read a different translation the other day, and this person said it a little differently, and it struck me more deeply. The line, previous translation that I've been using for many years, it says, I'm not going to go into it, but because of all these things, we are cautious not to be small-minded. Small-minded, and to me that was just like, well, we think the world's a certain way, but we're cautious that we're not really giving that a lot of attention, just that this is the way I think it is. We're cautious not to be small-minded. This other author put it like this. He said, whenever we feel that we are useless, there is something that we should know. Namely, that we have been afraid of becoming small. So for me, that resonates a little more. Because I've been doing this practice for 43 years, something like that. And yet I wonder, have I grasped anything that's really important or big? And there's a footnote to it from the author of this translation. He says, because we are worried about becoming small, we try to become better instead of realizing ourselves in the present. So again, even if we're thinking that we haven't done everything we need to do or want to do more, the point is we just have to settle ourselves right into that place and feel, again, just the pain of wanting to be more. And then I think we can digest that, and then maybe we can. We cultivate some capacity to live more fully. Just a couple more things. Another passage, Dolgen writes, the courage of a fisher person is to enter the water without avoiding deep sea dragons. The courage of a hunter is to travel the earth without avoiding tigers. The courage of a general is to face the drawn sword before him or her and see death as just like life. What then is the courage of patched robe monks? So what are we doing when we see all these other people who are living, hunters? I mean, this is, we got to go back in time and realize there's hunters, they go out into the forest, they got to deal with all the difficult things that are in a forest, tigers, and fishermen go out. Fisher people go out into the sea and deal with that. So they're putting their lives on the line in the work they do. What are we doing? Or what am I doing that's courageous? After a pause, Dolgen said, spread out your bedding and sleep. Set out your bowls and eat rice. Exhale through your nostrils, radiate light from your eyes. Do you know there is something that goes beyond? With vitality, eat lots of rice and then use the toilet. Transcend your personal prediction of future Buddhahood from Gautama Buddha. So he's basically saying we just do this simple life that we try to create. Hokyoji, you know, it's a residential community, more or less, but of course people come and stay for a while. But we try to create just a simple life there, where we're just doing something simple. So the courage is just to do that simple life over and over again. And it's also, I think, to go beyond just trying to contain yourself there. It's how does that reach out? How does it spread? How does it make a difference to people? So this is my last quote. A person of old said that the whole earth is our own Dharma body, but it must not be hindered by a Dharma body. If it were hindered by a Dharma body, to move the body even slightly would be impossible. There should be a way of getting the body out. What is the way by which people get the body out? For those who fail to express this way of getting the body out, the life of the Dharma body ceases to exist, ceases at once, and they are long sunk in a sea of suffering. If you are asked in this way, this is Dogen speaking, if you are asked in this way, how can you answer so as to keep the Dharma body alive and avoid sinking in the ocean of suffering? So I'll just review that just a bit. Person of old said, the whole earth is our own body, Dharma body. The whole earth is just this, our own Dharma body. But if this body is hindered by the idea of Dharma body, it can't move. It can't do anything. So what is the way that we actually get the body out and live in a world where Dharma is working? So Dogen's question was, if you are asked in this way, how can you answer so as to keep the Dharma body alive and avoid sinking in the ocean of suffering? So this is what I said right now is what I can do to answer that question. That's all I know what to do right now. So I'm just going to ask you, what do you think? How would you answer that question? Yes?
I don't know if this points to this, but it's something that's, you know, compelling me to say something. Something that you said before, but I think it ties in with the Dharma body as well, is, if I heard you correctly, was birth and death and aversion were kind of talked about. Birth, death, and aversion kind of talked around the same time period, you know, when you were speaking. So, okay. So I have I see what's happening, and not just see what's happening with the planet, I feel it. Mm-hmm. Okay, I also read things, you know, that I can see, report other things, and seeing what's happening on the planet, which is changing, and as far as I see it, we passed the tipping point. Mm. No matter what we do,
mm-hmm.
It's not going to, you know, and it's not going to happen because it's, you know, it would have to be an unprecedented change of the, you know, the whole world, mm-hmm. change what's happening planetarily. So I experience intellectual pain, emotional pain, some pain, sometimes pain in my body,
mm-hmm.
about seeing that this is how this is going.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that in my life that it's not so politically correct to bring what I'm trying to speaking about right now and having this recorded, because it seems like people don't want to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to, you know that. And when he's talked about it, he used the word investigation or investigating.
Mm-hmm.
That that's what I call part of investigating. Mm-hmm. If the Dharma body is our this whole world or this universe, is this where the Dharma wants to go? Is this where, what's, you know, like, let's just get, you know, carbon emissions, you know, just keep rising past 400 parts per bit, per million and keep going. And we just go, well, you know, that's okay. You know, not maybe in my lifetime we'll probably see it, but in my nephews and their children, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to have a very difficult life if they can even survive. Mm-hmm. So as a practicing Zozen, a beginner myself, Zozen Buddhist, mm-hmm. what do I do? Just be mindful of this and say, well, I'm mindful of this and let's not have these discussions because, you know, it's politically incorrect to speak about this for most people walking around. They don't want to hear it. So I experience that pain that it's hard for me to connect mm-hmm. with, you know, people on something and say, this is the most important issue of our time outside of perhaps awakening. Mm-hmm. So that was a mouthful. Can you comment about that?
Okay, I just want to make sure I understand what you said. Are you saying the people don't, who are the people who don't want to hear it?
I would say that's my interpretation uh-huh. of what happens when I start speaking about these things
right.
a bit. And it's like, yeah, okay, all right, well, let's go watch football.
Okay, so you're talking about just friends or people in general, or
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't know if you were speaking about right within our Dharma group or not, but
perhaps.
Well, we did have a panel discussion in this conference, and one person was really, really in the midst of, I think, doing this work. He lived in Brooklyn, New York. And he said, you know, if we go this direction, it's going to pull the rug out from under you. And he was basically talking to, I felt he was almost talking personally to me. but, you know, so it's really going to be challenging to actually do this. But I don't see any real choice. So I don't get such a feeling that we've tipped too far, that we can't restore. I mean, if I had that feeling, then it wouldn't help anything. I mean, maybe it has happened, maybe it hasn't, but who knows? I don't know who has the answer to that. So anyway, how do we just work with all of our energy? And we have to, this is how we have to watch our attachments to what we want from somebody else. How do you want them to respond to you when we're talking? And how does it feel when they say, I don't want to talk to you about that? Or let's go watch football. So I think you just have to be right there in that moment. And how can you just open yourself up to that moment and not get discouraged about it? So it really comes down to moment-by-moment conversation with each person we're talking to. So we can't get too... in other words, we can't get too big about it. You know, we can't... I think it's just meeting each circumstance the best we can and trying to address it with all of our energy and that we have and love, whatever. Openness. I don't know what effect it'll have. It's not so difficult, at least, to get discouraged, I think, when we see a lot of the things or hear them through our media.
Yeah, well, this is why I'm speaking right now. This is my full attention.
Mm-hmm.
Right now,
mm-hmm.
speaking about what I'm speaking about.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my fish jumping out of the water.
Yeah, yeah.
This is my thing. I don't have to. Whether I believe or not that fall happens and winter follows fall and then spring follows winter.
Mm-hmm.
I can believe that that's not how things are going to happen, but that's what's going to happen anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, that's how things happen in this relative reality.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you think it's not a tipping point. I see that it is through looking at scientific.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is what's happening. This is what's happening. This is what's going to continue to happen.
Right. Well, if I say I don't think it's just a thought. It's not a. It's just. I just have to find a way to keep moving without getting discouraged. So, that's all. Maybe it is. But I don't know. I can hope that it's not. And even if it is, we still have to go all the way through the tipping point and just do the best we can. Okay. Thank you, Danny. Anyone else? Can I repeat the question? Well, it was like this person from olden times, and this is Dogen speaking. So he's lived in the year 1200. So he's going back to someone who lived, I don't know when, 700 or 800, and said a person of old said that the whole earth is our Dharma body, but it can't be hindered by a Dharma body. Our body can't be hindered by some idea of enlightenment or Dharma body or absolute or oneness, something like that. It can't be hindered. Otherwise, we can't move our body, which means we can't actually move in a way that's effective. And so he's just saying there should be a way to get to move. And so then he's saying, for those who can't express the Dharma body, who fail to express this way of getting out of the body out, the life of the Dharma body ceases. In other words, the Dharma body just becomes an idea, a belief or something, but it's not living, it's not real, it's not active. So he's asking, the final question is, if the body, Dharma body ceases, he says, we are sunk in the ocean of suffering for a long time. So Dogen asked the question, if you hear this, what are you going to say to make it alive? He's asking that kind of his monks. And so, for me, that's just where I'm stopping. I'm just saying, this, what I just said, is what the only thing I can say right now. And so then I'm just asking what you have to say. Maybe about 8 more minutes, max. And of course, quietude is perfectly fine as well. So. Or no questions or comments. Well, one thing I could say too is when we sit down and do Zazen, that's sort of the heart of our practice in this tradition. So when we sit down, we have to really ask ourselves, what are we going to do? Because I think thinking about all this is helpful, but there's a time not to think about it. There's a time just to put your mind at ease, to just be present with yourself. Maybe you're feeling anxiety, tension, and that's not what I tried to, not what I'm trying to create for you. You come here, and I'm gonna like stir everything up. It's not exactly it. However, I'm in a place where I'm kind of stirred up. But the way we can really deal with it in an effective way, I think, is through the practice of Zazen. Is how do we actually, in the midst of all the turmoil that's existing everywhere, both internally and externally in the world, how do I just settle myself here in this place? So really ask yourself, when you're doing the practice of Zazen, what are you doing? Just ask yourself what, notice that your mind just might be wandering here and there, kind of without any discipline. But when you notice that, just bring it back to this place where it is, where we are. And this is where everybody is living. So this is the place where we can speak from. That's authentic. And then after that, then we have to do something. Kagyu Rinpoche always says that after doing all this Zazen. He says, then just do something. Usually it's pretty clear what to do. You know, we get all, maybe we get all confused about, I don't know what to do, I don't know what to do. But if you just actually look at your life right in front of you, yeah, it's pretty clear. This is what I do next. Okay, well, I'm going to stop. I just want to thank you a lot for your attention and allowing me to express what I was able to express. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.